Thank you, band. Well, it all begins with a God who is intent on getting his purposes accomplished in this world. When we talk about God's call, it doesn't begin with us, the ones who are called. It begins with the caller, with the God who calls. So the conversation starts with God and his call and his purposes. His purpose is to heal and to save and to bless. His purpose is to reconcile, to redeem, and to restore. God is at work in this world. And God is determined not to go at it alone. The Bible clearly teaches us over and over and over that God is a God who calls people to partner with him in doing his work. God continually breaks into our lives. He interrupts our agendas. He confronts us where we are, and he summons us to be about his business. These weeks, we're talking about the God who apprehends people. People like us, ordinary people, flawed people, to be a part of his extraordinary story, to be a part of his extraordinary work in this world. These weeks, my hope is that the God of the Bible, who would not leave people alone, but instead he apprehended them to be about his work, my hope is that the very same God will not leave you alone, but that he will apprehend you to be a part of his work, that you would hear God's call upon your life and that you would respond to the God who apprehends. Today, we get to encounter the story, and I know it seems kind of odd to hear this story this time of year, but today we get to hear the story of God apprehending Mary, mother of Jesus, for God's work. Would you stand with me as we hear from Luke chapter 1? In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you're to call him Jesus. He'll be great, and he'll be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I'm a virgin." The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who is said to be unable to conceive is now in her sixth month, for no word from God will ever fail." "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May it be according to your word." And then the angel left her. Church, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. You may be seated. 6 months later, Luke sets the stage for us and gives us the timeline. It was 6 months later, 6 months after God opened up the womb of a childless elderly couple. 6 months after that, God finds a young teenage girl in a place so remote that Luke has to clarify where it is. Luke says, "This was in Nazareth. It's a town in Galilee." That's like saying, "It's in Waverly. It's a town in Tennessee." This is a place that is so far out of the way that it needs some explanation as to where it is. And anyone in those days who did know where Nazareth was knew that nothing good ever came from there. It was here, in this place where most people didn't know where it was, this place that the people who did know where it was knew that nothing good came from there. It was in this place that God came to Mary. Mary was a handmaiden. That's a dressed-up word for servant or slave. She was of a lower peasant class. She did not come from prominence. She did not have an important family name in the community. She had no wealth to speak of. She was, essentially, legally, she was property. The only chance she had of having a future was to marry a man and hopefully have some children. In that culture, in that day, in that age, that's who she was, and that was the only future that was open to her. That was plan A. Find a guy, get married, have kids. That's the only thing you're good for. And if you can't do that, you're not good for anything. So this is the situation that Mary's in when this comes upon her. And we know at this point of the story that Mary's engaged. It would have been, in that culture, a year-long engagement that would have been as legally binding as marriage itself. It would have required a divorce to undo this engagement. Her hopes of being a somebody, as much of a somebody as her culture allowed her to be, her future, the only future that she was permitted to have, was right in front of her. It's now the engagement, next is the marriage, then hopefully the kids. And for Mary, it was this or nothing. The pieces of her future were beginning to fall into place. And that's when God's angel came upon Mary. And the opening phrase is, "Greetings, you who are highly favored, the Lord is with you." First off, there's the shock of being visited by an angel of the Lord. And then there's this overwhelming sense of, no, not me. Like everyone else who God has called, Moses was, oh, no, not me. Gideon had this sense of, no, not me. Isaiah had this sense of, no, not me. Like others who have been called, like many who have been called by God, there's this overwhelming sense of, no, no, not me. This was probably the first time in Mary's life, as this angel came upon her, this was probably the first time in her life that she had ever been referred to as favored. She wasn't the type of person you would have looked at and said, oh, she's favored. Nothing about Mary's life says that Mary was favored. In sports, when a person or a team is favored, it means that they're expected to win. Nobody would have looked at this young teenage girl from a peasant class in a good-for-nothing place, who was basically property in her day, nobody would have looked at her and said, this person is favored. This person's expected to win. She came from a place where people weren't favored. She belonged to the gender that, in that culture that was very lopsided, the gender that was not favored, and she came from a class of people that were not favored. Nothing about her says she's favored. Yet the angel of the Lord came upon her and pronounced her as favored. After the Lord's angel made this statement of favor, at first Mary just couldn't get anything out. She froze in the presence of the angel of the Lord, awestruck, afraid. And so then the angel continued the conversation, and the angel said, "Don't be afraid, Mary." And I love that the angel called her by her name, because I wonder how many times she had actually been called by her name. "Don't be afraid, Mary. You have found favor." There's that word again. He uses it twice. "You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you're to call him Jesus." The name Jesus means God saves. "He will be great and be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will never end." Folks, that is a lot of big news to dump on a young teenage girl. She probably didn't make it past hearing the part where the angel said, "You will conceive," right? Everything that the angel said after "you will conceive," Mary probably just didn't even register the rest of the conversation. Because this news that she was going to have a baby, That's the news that she had been waiting for her whole short life. In that culture, that's the only thing she was going to be good for. Everybody told her, this is your only option. This is your plan A. There's not a plan B. You're going to be worth something if you find a guy and have some children, and that's the only chance you have at being anything useful. She had waited, she had wanted, she had hoped for the day that the news of carrying a child would come. But not like this. Folks, this was, and there's no other way to put this, this was, as she received this news, she didn't receive it as good news. This is pretty horrific news. She was, Luke says, she was troubled. She was devastated. She didn't hear this pronouncement and say, oh, this is great news. She received this as terrifying news. You see, for Mary, this news means a teenage unwed pregnancy in first century Palestine. For Mary, this means that her fiancé now has the legal right to divorce her. This means that she'll be shunned and ridiculed. It means that she will probably be perceived as damaged goods for the rest of her life. It means that she could be charged with adultery. If Joseph says, not mine, then she could be charged with adultery, and the result of that could be that she could be stoned to death. It means that she will soon be shipped off to spend a few months with out-of-town relatives, just like many young unwed mothers throughout history. It means that her plans, her dreams about marriage and family and life, dashed, gone. See, in this moment, this news was not received as good news. It was received as terrifying news. Folks, if I had been Mary, and I have to say I'm the furthest thing from Mary, but if I had been Mary, and if I had been bold enough, I might have said back to the angel, could you please go favor somebody else? Could you go favor somebody else? You say I'm favored, but this news that you're giving me right now doesn't make me feel very favored. In the Greek, the word for favor has the same root word as the word for grace. And so the angel, in visiting Mary, is in essence saying to Mary, Mary, you are graced by God. In spite of who this culture says you are, in spite of what this culture says you are, in spite of where you come from, in spite of the fact that you're property, in spite of your lack of pedigree, in spite of your low social standing, in spite of the fact that this pregnancy is going to be a scandal, there's no other way about it, in spite of everything you lack, you are graced by God. God chooses you. That's grace. God chooses you not because of what you bring to the table, not because you have it all together, or you're the best and brightest and you've got things that you offer, not because of who you are, but God chooses you because of who God is. See, God had no reason to choose Mary, and God chose Mary anyway, and that is grace. Then Mary asked the question, the looming question. It was on Mary's mind, it's on everybody's mind, and if you'd have been in Mary's shoes, you'd have asked the same question. Knowing that she has not done anything to bring about a baby into the world, her big question is, how? That's the obvious question, right? How? I am a, and she probably whispered, virgin. How? Folks, did you know that how is not a problem for God? How is not a problem for God? God never tosses and turns at night with his mind racing, trying to figure out how he's going to get everything done. In the beginning, in creation, God didn't say, oh, how am I going to make everything? In the history of the people of Israel, God didn't say, oh, no, how am I going to get them out of slavery? He didn't say, how am I going to get them across this Red Sea? God doesn't say, how will the impossible get done? God doesn't worry and wonder about, how am I going to get that marriage fixed? Or how am I going to get that body to be made whole? How will there be enough when there isn't enough? How will it get paid for? How am I going to overpower sin? How am I going to destroy death? Folks, how never stumps God. How never stumps God. God says to Mary, because I'm God, that's how. And that's really all you need to know. There's the answer to your question. I'm God. That's how it's going to happen. My spirit is going to make this happen. That's how it's going to happen. Folks, whenever God calls somebody to something, it is very, very natural to ask how. It's natural to ask, God, you want this to happen and you want me to be a part of it, and how? It is very natural when God calls you to say, God, how? How? You need to know that every time you ask God how, God's answer is, I'm going to take care of the how. I will take care of the how. I've got this. You leave the how to me. You just come with me. You just follow me. You just cooperate with me. You just give me your yes and let me handle the how. And then Mary gives her response, and her response is so beautiful and humble. And Mary says, I am the Lord's servant. May it be according to your word. In other words, okay, you have my yes. I don't get how. I don't get how this is going to be, but however it's going to be, let it be. And then after that came this journey, this lifelong journey for Mary of God bringing the Savior of the world through the womb of a willing servant, an unwed teenage mother, of a peasant class from a good-for-nothing place. God apprehended Mary, not just to bear Jesus in this moment, but to raise him, to mother him, to be with him all the way to the cross and then beyond into resurrection life. This is Mary's calling from God. See, until this point, until this moment, Mary thought that her future was one thing. She thought that her future was the one thing her culture told her that her future was going to be. The culture dictated it. Plan A, this is your only option. This is how it's going to be. And God comes upon Mary and God says, no, there's something else. There is something more that I have in mind for you. And folks, what God had in mind for Mary was far greater than anything Mary could dream up, anything Mary could hope for, anything that Mary could map out for her own future. What God had in mind for Mary was far greater than anything that her culture told her she was good for. And I want you to know this morning, it is the very same for you. God has a plan for you that is far greater than your plan for you. And it is far greater because it is God's plan for you. I'm going to say that again, because if I was listening to a preacher say that, I'd be tempted to say amen to something like that. Let me say that again. God has plans for you that are far greater than your plans for you because they are God's plans for you. The one who created you for a purpose has called you to live into that purpose. He has a design on you. He has a direction for you. He has a purpose in you. He has a hand upon you. And he has a future that is for you, that is just for you. And I know what you're thinking. Not me, not me, not me. Get in line with your not me. Okay? Everybody says, oh, no, not me. God wouldn't call me. Folks, after all these weeks of looking at all these people God has called, Moses said, oh, no, not me. Gideon, no, no, not me. Isaiah, no, no, not me. Now Mary, no, no, not me. Darren said it, no, no, not me. So when God comes upon you and calls you to do what God calls you to do, go ahead and say it, no, God, not me, not me, not me. But also understand that the God who has called you is the God who is equipping you, and that God has chosen you, even you, especially you, for what God has for you. And what God has for you is so much greater than what you have for you. I've shared these words before. It's been a few years, but I've got to share them every few years to you because these are some of the best words I know. Bob Benson says, it was not something in me that made God call me. It was something in him. It began in his love for me, and that is why these words of Jesus have such a lovely sound. You did not choose me, I chose you. It was not that I came upon Jesus Christ, and when I saw him, something within me ran out to meet him and holding on to him, begging him to lift me out of myself and make me the person of my dreams. It was not that I came upon him, it's that he came upon me. His heart rushed out to me. He held on to me. He saw me, he loved me, he chose me. I didn't find him, he found me. I wasn't a replacement for someone who didn't want to serve. I wasn't asked to play in the field where someone was already covering. He saw me. He called me. He selected me. He picked me. He singled me out. He decided on me. He opted for me. He fixed upon me. He determined in favor of me. He preferred me. He espoused me. He chose me. He did not refuse me. He did not reject me. He did not repudiate me. He did not spurn me. He did not dismiss me. He did not exclude me. He did not ignore, disregard, cast away, throw aside, or leave me out. He chose me. It was not obligatory, mandatory, required, called for, deserved, necessary, imperative, compulsory, or forced. He just chose me. It was his open, voluntary, willful, selective, deliberate, intentional choice. He chose me. Out of his devotion, fondness, adoration, tenderness, affection, attachment, emotion, sympathy, empathy, and love, he just chose me. And that has made all the difference in my life. Church, the one who has created you for purpose is the one who is calling you into that purpose. He has a design on you. He has a purpose for you. He has a hand upon you, a direction for you, a future for you that is just for you. But here's the thing you need to know. While it is for you, it is not about you. This is where it trips so many of us up. Notice in this message that the angel is giving to Mary, it starts out by saying, you're going to conceive and give birth to a son, and then the whole rest of the message is about who? Jesus. It's not about Mary anymore, it's all about Jesus. It's about her bearing Christ to the world. And folks, it's the very same thing for you and for me and God's call upon our lives. It is for us. His call is for me. It is for you. But it's not about me and it's not about you. In the very same way that it was for Mary, her purpose to bear Christ into the world, our purpose, our calling in so many different types of ways is to bear Christ into this world. He chooses you by his grace. I know if you were him, you would never choose you. But he chooses you by his grace to be about his work. And there's an element of surrender that is needed. There's an element of submission that is needed, where you come to the place where you say, okay, God, in giving my yes to you, I recognize that the rest of this story is not going to be about me, but the rest of this story is going to be all about you. Laying down your plans in order to embrace the plans that God has for you. His plans that are so much bigger, greater, richer, fuller than the plans that you have for you. Oh, church, don't settle for your plans. Lay them down. Embrace what he has for you. What he wants from you more than anything is for you to say yes and let him handle the how. Because that's what God does. Say yes and let him handle the how. These weeks, God is speaking and moving and calling. And there are some people who God is calling these weeks to career ministry. Missionaries, pastors, serving in ministry and career ways. And some of you have responded to that. It's beautiful and powerful. But for everyone who is not responding to God's call to career ministry, if he's not calling you to career ministry, I want you to know you are still called by God to ministry. It may not be a ministry that is a career, but it is still a ministry that God has for you, where he has you, wanting you to do his work. So God is calling and God is speaking. And what he wants for us more than anything is to say yes and to let him handle the how. Church, would you stand with me? I'm going to pray. I invite you to pray. The altar's open. If the Lord's speaking to you right now, would you meet with him here?